The final case today, Irvin versus Johnson & Johnson.
Good morning. May it please the court, Ms. Winter. My name is Layla Watson, and I am representing Mickey Irvin, who was the plaintiff in the case below. There are two principles of Daubert, which I think are at issue in this case. The first being that Daubert requires that when experts testify, that they should adhere to the same rigorous standards that are demanded of, in this case, physicians. The same rigorous standards demanded of physicians in their daily practice. The second Daubert principle that I think is at issue in this case is that the district court or the trial court is not to weigh on the credibility or the truth and accuracy of any expert's opinions. They are merely to rule on the scientific reliability of their methodology.
But could you help me with this? You said in your brief that some of the literature did not any cases of arterial clotting, Crohn's disease, but at least one peer-reviewed study did report a higher incidence of Crohn's disease than the Remicade. Why doesn't that make Dr. McKinney that Remicade course?
Dr. McKinley didn't. He used not just that information, but he brought to bear all of the information that he had on Crohn's disease, on diabetes type 1, on arterial clotting. And arterial clotting is very rare. And he said at his deposition that what he found in all of the literature on Crohn's disease, there were 27 cases reported in the entire world, period. That was it. And that what he found when he did went through his differential diagnosis and he did his physical exam and he did his history and he did all of his lab work and his personal observations of this patient who he knew very well because he'd been his primary treating doctor for a year, and he finds out that 4 days before he's seen him, he's had his second Remicade infusion. 5 days after his second Remicade infusion, he's got an arterial clot in his leg and he has none of these other things. And he says, I go through this differential diagnosis based on what I know of him and based on what I know of these diseases, and I add to it this new information that he had this Remicade infusion 4 or 5 days earlier. And I come to the conclusion that I'm able to rule everything out. I rule everything in. I rule everything out. After that, and he writes all this down in the medical records. This isn't Monday morning quarterbacking. He does this as he's seeing this patient. He writes down about Remicade. Afterwards, he comes and I find him because I get the medical records and I contact him and I send him the AER, the adverse events reports, and he reviews those and he finds that they corroborate what he had concluded when trying to make decisions to diagnose and treat his patient, that those AER reports do corroborate it.
Didn't Dr. McKinley get the full case reports from FDA instead of the line? In other words, what I wondered was, did he know which of the case reports of our associated with Remicade? Did he know whether these were individuals for rheumatoid arthritis, or did he know these are individuals who are being treated for Crohn's?
Your Honor, no, he did not. He got what I sent to him, and I sent to him what I received pursuant to my FOIA request of the FDA. So everything that you get when you do a FOIA request is what he received. And that information would not have told him which was rheumatoid and which were Crohn's patients, which is sort of my point in my brief. Sometimes we don't have epidemiology. And every day, doctors treat patients and make diagnostic and treatment decisions with no epidemiology. And that for the court to require that an expert go to some higher standard than that demanded of doctors in the field in their daily practice is not something that Daubert required. Decisions that have looked at it out of the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, the eighth, and the ninth circuit in cases just like this one where there is no epidemiology. And I might mention that I distinguish cases like breast implants and Parlodel. In breast implants, there were 37 epidemiological studies. And every one of those 37 studies said there is no relationship between breast implants and systemic disease. In Parlidel, there were 4 epidemiological studies. Every one of those 4 said there is no association between Parlidel and stroke. That is not the situation with Remicade. The defendants have, although they criticized Dr. McKinley for not bringing his case report, they repeatedly rely on 40 published and unpublished clinical trials, a safety data registry of 30,000 patients, 700,000 worldwide exposures. Not a single item of that data is in this record.
But can you explain why he ruled out Crohn's as the cause of the clot when even the limited studies and case reports that he referred to showed a higher incidence of arterial
Your Honor, he did not reach the conclusion that there was a higher occurrence rate with Crohn's than there was with Remicade. The district court on its own, in the face of every single expert in the case, treating and non-treating, who could not provide those occurrence rates, the district court on its own drew occurrence rates based on one study here and one document here. Dr. McKinley did not do those calculations. That was all the district court. Dr. McKinley said that he was able to rule out Crohn's disease on several factors. Number one, Mickey Irvin had had Crohn's disease, severe Crohn's disease, since 1998 for a period of nearly 4 years, and he had had no problems with clotting. Number two, he never found any tendency in Mickey Irvin, despite all of his concurrent ailments, to be clotting. There were times when Mickey had it. Diabetic ketoacidosis, he had thrombocytopenia, he had all these things, and he had Crohn's disease, but he never had a clot. And the temporal relationship between the Remicade and the clot as opposed to the 3 to 4 year history of Crohn's disease and the clot. And he says that based on his information and his studies, arterial clotting is very, very rarely associated with Crohn's disease.
I need help with this because the district court criticized Dr. McKinley a differential diagnosis because he did not rule in Crohn's cause. Yet on appeal in the brief, the claim is that he did include Crohn's disease as a later ruled it out. So my question is the district court wrong saying that Dr. McKinley did not in Crohn's when?
Your Honor, our position is yes, and that it was an abuse of discretion because I think the way that the district court got to that conclusion was instead of sticking to determining scientific reliability, the district court blurred that line between scientific reliability, which is the court's area, and the jury's role, which is to weigh on credibility, truth, and accuracy. For example, when it came to the Crohn's disease, the court says, the court does this mathematical formula and says that it chooses to believe the mathematical formula based on one reported series of cases, this Mayo Clinic one that Judge Tinder relies on, it's going to believe that data over all the other data that Dr. McKinley looked at. That is not the trial court's role. The trial court's role is simply to look at scientific reliability. Was there a scientifically reliable basis for Dr. McKinley to rule in and then rule out Crohn's disease? I think what the court did was it went too far, and it also determined that Dr. McKinley's opinion that arterial clotting and Crohn's disease don't go together was not credible, not believable, on the basis of the court's mathematical formula that was based on a single reported case series.
Yeah, but some of the shortcomings that the district court were admitted by Dr. McKinley himself. For instance, he admitted that he didn't know in 2001 about the literature associating Crohn's disease with arterial thrombosis. He said he would have to reinterpret his case in a completely So there were concessions that seemed to call the reliability of differential diagnosis. Add that to the limited utility of the case reports that he relied on to establish the link. You've got a problem, it seems to me.
My time is up, but if I could just briefly address
I'd appreciate it.
Dr. McKinley in his deposition does not say, I mean, he says those things, but he says more than that, Your Honor. He also goes on to say, I reviewed all this literature, and I found the 27 reports of arterial clotting in Crohn's disease patients reported in the world. And I've set it out in my brief in the facts section. But he says, and he acknowledges, I found those, and I have treated Crohn's disease, and in my experience, Crohn's disease is associated with venous clotting, not arterial clotting. It is so very, very rare. And the other physicians that took care of Mickey Irvin, his gastroenterologist, say the same thing, that arterial clotting and Crohn's disease is very, very rare, extremely rare. It's venous clotting and Crohn's disease that you see so much more frequently. In the thousands of patients that these gastroenterologists saw together, there was but a single arterial clot.
Thank you, counsel. Winter?
May it please the court, my name is John Winter, and I'm here today on behalf of the appellees. Judge, to answer your question, Dr. McKinley did not rule in Crohn's disease to start with. And it's page 14 of our brief, I think it's page 98 of his deposition. He said, I only thought it was related to venous thrombosis, therefore I did not rule in Crohn's disease back in 2001. What's, I think, important to know here is when Dr. McKinley prepared his report, he didn't look at any literature. He didn't do any research. What he did is, as counsel said, looked at his medical records, which say Remicade's a possibility, looked at these line items, wrote his report. When the defendant's experts submitted their reports and cited multiple articles which associate Crohn's disease with arterial thrombosis, Dr. McKinley looked at it and said, I'm not sure. But during the course of his deposition, as the district court correctly pointed out, he said on two different occasions with respect to laboratory results and peer-reviewed literature, I'm back to possibilities. I have to rethink this. So what we're left with is several possibilities which can't be ruled out. Whether they can be ruled in is not really material at this point because Judge Tinder did the right thing here. What he did is he properly applied Daubert, said differential diagnosis, there's a question as to whether or not it suffices on general causation, but I find too many analytical gaps in Dr. McKinley's analysis, in rule in and rule out. And every court has said that if you're going to rely on a differential diagnosis, it must be properly done. It must be reliable. And Judge Tinder clearly did not abuse his discretion in saying that Dr. McKinley's opinion here is not reliable enough to go forward. And with only one expert, summary judgment, therefore, was required when the in limine motion was granted.
I probably should have asked Ms. Watson this, but what symptoms did Dr. Irwin experience that required the transfusion of often Benadryl?
What happens is, and the record is not perfectly clear on this, but you can start having hives. You can have a little shortness of breath. Remicade's a protein. When you infuse any protein, there's a chance of some type of infusion or hypersensitive, allergic-type reaction.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a couple of different variations, but that's the concern. You stop, you give the Benadryl, and then you resume. I mean, it just shows that Mr. Irvin received good care from very knowledgeable doctors. He has several very serious diseases. He's a very complicated patient. And, you know, what happened to him is unfortunate, but Judge Tinder correctly ruled in this case.
Why aren't the problems that Judge Tinder out with respect to Dr. McKinley's differential diagnosis issues, why don't they go to the weight of his opinion rather than the reliability?
Well, to answer your question, Judge, he has a responsibility to look at the reliability. Are there gaps in the analysis that are too great? And he did that here. And when you look at Daubert, we all know it's not a hard and fast rule, but there's a lot of different things to look at. And when you don't have epidemiological data, you don't have peer-reviewed literature, you have lab results which are indicative of a hypercoagulability disease, and you have no hard evidence suggesting Remicade should be ruled in. You have case reports where the circuits are legion on being cautious with that.
But isn't the doctor allowed to factor in the temporal proximity of the clotting to the Remicade? His
temporal relationship, yes, Your Honor, is one fact to be considered. But every circuit is pretty clear that temporal relationship alone is not enough. Moreover, if you look at the cases that my colleague cites, when you look at temporal relationship, there is underlying scientific validity to the association. I mean, the Benedy case, the Westbury case, the Shaw case, there's a well-established body of literature that says that these two events can happen. So then the temporal relationship has some analytical weight to it. That doesn't exist here. And temporal relationship alone, no circuit has ever said, is enough to satisfy Daubert. Unless the court has any further questions.
But just curious, is the FDA, it's been 5 years since this event, has the FDA done anything, on, including blood clot warning on Remicade?
It is the alternative basis for summary judgment. I don't think the court needs to get to that. But the record actually reflects that in 2002, in a review of the package insert, the labeling for Remicade, there was a suggestion to add the term thrombosis to the adverse reaction section, which
I know that was rejected.
That was rejected,
since that time, any new activity going on in that area?
In that regard, no. I mean, Remicade has been approved for several different indications since then. The labeling is revised on a regular basis, but with respect to blood clotting and thrombosis, there has been no activity, and you have those biannual periodic safety updates that get submitted to FDA and regulatory bodies around the world.
Well, then what's that warning for thrombophlebitis deep?
That is for venous thrombosis that occurs in some patients, and to answer the question, if you have bad rheumatoid arthritis, that is something that can happen. So you see it, and you put it in the package insert, and when you treat lots of people with Crohn's disease and rheumatoid arthritis, you are going to get all sorts of vascular-type events. And you let doctors know about it, but that doesn't mean there's a causal connection. It's just something that a responsible company, in conjunction with FDA, advises prescribers.
Thank you, Mr. Winter. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.